Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Bamatzia, daf Ayin Aleph. We are holding at the top of Ayin Aleph, Amud Aleph, four lines from the top, Ika Demasnila. Gemara is continuing its discussion of borrowing from a non-Jew with ribis and lending to a non-Jew with ribis. I think Gemara is going to have some Agada-Idic statements along those lines. Then it's going to get into a whole discussion trying to understand the Ger Tzedek, which is written in the context of selling an Eved Ivri to somebody, and also the expression of a ger toshav that's stated in the context of lending with ribis. That's going to be the discussion of an aleph. Then the Gemara Nama Beis is going to discuss certain cases where it's permitted to lend with interest if you set up the loan with the knowledge of an akum, and it's considered as if it's going through the non-Jew. But if it's not considered as going through a non-Jew, and it basically is just a loan with interest between two Jews, then it would be prohibited. So the Gemara is going to discuss those cases and try to figure out when it is permitted, when it's not. So let's pick up at the top of Amud Aleph, four lines in, Ika Demasnila. Ika Demasnila, l'ha de Rav Huna, aha de Tani Rav Yosef. There were some who taught this statement that Rav Huna made about lending to a non-Jew with ribis. We had seen it at the end of yesterday's discussion. Some taught it on the following statement of Rav Yosef, because Rav Yosef taught as follows. Im kesef talvet ami et ha'ani imach. There's a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim which tells us that when you lend money to my nation, to the poor people in, amongst my nation, so we darsh in the pasuk as follows, that ami v'nochri, let's say you have the option of lending either to a Jew, to someone who comes from my nation, or to a non-Jew, then ami kodem, the Jew takes precedence. Ani v'ashir, ani kodem. If you have the option of lending to a poor person or to a rich person, the poor person would take precedence. Now, I suspect someone might ask, why would you ever lend to a rich person? The rich person is rich. He doesn't need your money. So I think the way that you have to understand this is in light of another Gemara in Ksuvis, Daf Samach Zayin Amabez. The Gemara there speaks all about tzedakah and all about how you should give tzedakah to different people. So it says if you have a rich person who comes to you and he doesn't want to use his own money, so he wants to borrow money from you, you should first give him the money as a matana, because that's the only way he's going to accept it, is if you're giving it to him as a gift. He doesn't want to have to spend his own money, so he's not going to want to take a loan either that he'll have to pay back. So you first give it to him as a gift, and then later on, you'll come to him to demand payment of that loan. So you do find cases where ashirim, where rich people do need money, do need loans, because maybe he doesn't want to spend the money on his own. So if you have that option between a rich person and a poor person, then the poor person would take precedence. Aniecha v'aniye ircha, aniecha kodmin. Let's say you have poor people which belong to you, literally, which Rashi explains are people who are from your family, or you just have poor people which come from your city but are not related to you, then the poor people that you're related to would take precedence. Aniye ircha v'aniye ircheres, aniye ircha kodmin. Similarly, if you have the option of lending to poor people from your own city or poor people from a different city, you should lend to the poor people from your own city first. So that was the statement of Rav Yosef, and now the Gemara is going to address it and teach that statement of Rav Huna that was taught on this statement of Rav Yosef. Amar Mar, referencing this last teaching from Rav Yosef that we just discussed, Ami v'nachri, Ami kodem. We started by saying that if you have the option of lending to a Jew from my nation, from God's nation, or to a non-Jew, then the Jew takes precedence. So says the Gemara, Pshita, that's obvious. Obviously, it's much better to loan to a Jew and to help out a fellow Jew than it is to help out a non-Jew. So Amar Rav Nachman, says Rav Nachman, Amar li Huna, Huna told me, Rav Huna, this is the statement of Rav Huna that we were addressing, lo nitzercha da'afilu le'nachri b'ribis u'Yisrael b'chinam. It's needed to tell you that it's better to loan to a Jew than it is to loan to a non-Jew, even in a case where you could lend to the non-Jew with interest, because we assume that that's generally speaking permitted, and you can't lend to the non-Jew, to the Jew with ribis. So even if you have the option of making more money by lending to the non-Jew with interest, it's still preferred that you lend to the Jew without ribis. Bechinam here, for free, literally just means without giving ribis, because obviously you can't charge another Jew ribis. So what Rav Huna is telling us, and what the pasuk from Rav Yosef is really telling us, is that when you have the option of lending to a Jew without ribis or to a non-Jew with ribis, even though financially it may be better for you to lend to the non-Jew with ribis, still the Torah would prefer that you lend to the Jew without ribis. That's the first discussion based on the previous statement of Rav Huna that we had seen. Now says Gemara Tanya. We have a Braisa. Amar Rabbi Yosi, says Rabbi Yosi, Bo ure samius eneyam shal malave beribis. Come and see just how blind people are who lend with interest. How are they so blind? What does this mean on a metaphorical level? That Adam kore lechaveiro rasha, if a person calls his friend wicked, if he calls him an evil person, then yoredi molechayev. the person who was insulted by his friend is likely to fight back with his friend and be upset that he just called him a Rasha. But when it comes to Malave Beribis, people who lend with interest, the Hem, those people who lend with interest, Mevi and Edim, they bring witnesses, the Lavlar and a scribe, the Kulmus and a quill, the Dio and ink, the Kotman Bechotman, and they write and sign on this document that Ploni Zeh Kafar Beloah Israel, that this guy who's lending with interest to another Jew has completely rejected the God of Israel. What the Braisa is saying is it's obviously horrible to lend with interest, but when someone is referred to as a Rasha by his friend, that's enough to get them upset. That's enough to cause them to fight with their friend. And yet someone who lends with interest is basically going through this whole formal legal process involving all these Edim and people to sign on the document, really just testifying that he is a Rasha, that he's a wicked person because he's violating the Torah and he is lending with interest. So you see from the actions of someone who lends with interest just how blind people who lend with interest are, blind so to speak, because they totally ignore how bad it is to be a Rasha, and they just go ahead and sign off to this and involve all these parties in their loan with interest, which is against the Torah's desires.
It says that the footnote there, that it's so bad that the person would even consider committing suicide.
Really?
Yeah, that's just a Rasha.
The person would
The person who lends money, Beribis, should consider committing suicide?
No, he said the insulted party tends to take the insult as seriously
as possible. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Beating him. Oh. Even try to take his life.
Right, that's in the context of someone who calls his friend a Rasha. So if you look in Rashi, Yoredi Molochayev, we said the response of someone who is called a Rasha by his friend is to literally go down to the person's livelihood, for lack of a better translation. A few different explanations what it really means. Tosos quotes from a Rav Tzadok Gaon that it means the person who is called wicked is allowed to burn the grain of the other person. And Tosos says, I don't know where that came from. But what does Rashi say? Someone who's called wicked by his friend generally fights with the other person as if the person who insulted him hit him, injured him in a physical way, and it's as if he came and tried to kill him, so to speak. And then Rashi quotes another parish, but I don't think you like that parish so much. Fine, but yeah, very interesting. People who loan with interest are completely blind, essentially. Says the Gemara further, Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, we have a braisa where Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, Kol mi sheyesh lo mos, umal be'otam shelo beribis, ala b'katib omer, kaspa lo notan b'nesha, v'shochad al naki lo lakach, osa eile lo yimo le'olam. Anyone who has money, and he lends the money without interest, it's about him that the pasuk is stated, and this is a pasuk in Tehillim, that he didn't give his money with ribis, with interest, and he didn't take a bribe for nothing. So, osa eile lo yimo le'olam. Anyone who keeps all of these statements, who doesn't violate these prohibitions, will never collapse forever. Halamata shekol amalve beribis nechasa mitmotetin. And by inference, we can learn that anyone who does loan with interest, his property will collapse, his property will completely depreciate in value. Says the Gemara, "V'hakachazina delomos fi beribis v'kamin motetin." But we do see people who don't lend money with interest, and yet their property does depreciate over time, and they lose all of their possessions. So how can you say that anybody who doesn't lend with interest will never lose all their possessions? We seem to find people who do. So Amar Belazar, halalu mitmotetin ve'olin, v'halalu mitmotetin ve'einan olin. Says Rabbi Elazar, you have to make a distinction. Those who don't lend with interest, their property may depreciate in value, but then they'll always rise back up. They'll always be able to come back to their wealth. But people who lend with ribis, their property is going to depreciate over time, and it will never come back. They'll never be able to emerge from the poverty that will strike them because they lend with ribis. That's how you have to understand this pasuk in Sefer Tehillim. Now, says Gemara further, Lama tabit bogdim tacharish kibela, there's other gear says bibela, Rasha, Tzadik Mimenu. So this is a pasuk from Habakkuk in the first parak, where the pasuk says, why should you look at these rebellious people? Why should you be quiet when an evil person swallows someone who's more righteous than him? That's Tzadik Mimenu. So Amar Rav Huna, Tzadik Mimenu Bolea, Tzadik Gomer Eno Bolea. Says Rav Huna, the way you have to understand this pasuk is that the pasuk speaks about the swallowing of an evil person, where he swallows someone who's more righteous than him. So says Rav Huna, an evil person can only swallow someone who's more righteous than him, tzadik mimenu bolea, but he cannot swallow someone who's completely righteous. Tzadik gomer eino bolea. He would never be able to swallow up someone who is a tzadik gomer. So now the Gemara is going to get into that discussion that we referenced, where the Gemara doesn't really understand the descriptions of gerim in two different contexts. That which the Torah refers to a ger tzedek, a normal convert, a complete convert, in the context of selling an eved ivri, and where it refers to a ger toshav, a convert who we assume still worships Ove Kochav. He doesn't worship Ove Kochav anymore, but he still eats nevelos. He doesn't keep the Torah completely, but he's at least accepted not to worship idols. So Tanya, says the Braisa, Rebbe Omer, Ger Tzedek Ha'amr Le'inin Mechira, Ve'ger Toshav Ha'amr Le'inin Ribis, Ein Yodei Amahu. I don't really understand what the Torah means when it refers to a Ger Tzedek, a complete convert, in the context of selling an Eved Ivri, and when it refers to this second type of ger, someone who hasn't fully accepted the religion, in the context of ribbis, I can't really understand those psukim. And the Gemara is going to explain what exactly Rebbe didn't understand. Ger tzedek ha'amr le'inyan mechira, that which the Torah refers to a complete ger in the context of the selling of an eved ivri, d'chtiv v'chiyamuch achicha yimach v'nimkar lach, the pasuk says that it will come to be that your brother, another Jewish person, will be financially downtrodden, he won't be doing well in business, and he's going to have to sell himself to you. So says the Gemara, the way we understand this pasuk is v'nimkar lach, he's going to be sold to you, but if you continue darshaning the psukim, you see that v'lo l'cha ela l'ger, he's not really going to sell himself to you in order to recover from his weak financial state, he's actually going to sell himself to a convert, sh'nemar l'ger. As the verse says, that he's going to sell himself to a convert. Below the ger tzedek, ela the ger toshav. It's not going to be to a normal, complete ger that he's going to sell himself. He's going to sell himself to a ger toshav, this secondary type of ger that we refer to, who doesn't worship idols but still eats non-kosher meat. Sh'nemar le ger toshav. As the verse says, that he's going to sell himself to this type of ger, a ger toshav. Then the verse continues and says, mishpachad ger, that he's going to sell himself to the family of a convert. So mishpacha ger, we understand to mean zehanachri. That's a non-Jew, probably because if it's the family of a convert, so the convert converted, he's now Jewish, but his family, which he's not really related to halachically anymore, but his biological family is not Jewish. Kshehu omer o le'eker, and when the verse says that he's going to sell himself to some offshoot of this non-Jew, so zehanimkar la'avodas kochavim atzma. That's referring to somebody who sells himself to actually work, to worship Avodas Kochavim. He's going to do work for the people who serve Avodas Kochavim. Rashi says what this generally means is Lachtov Eitzim Belishov Mayim. He's going to chop down trees and he's going to draw water in order to be used for the service of the Avodas Kochavim. And Rashi points out that this whole discussion is really coming from a Braisa, a few different places. It comes up in Erchen and Daf Lamed, which Rashi quotes. I think it also comes up in Kiddush and Daf Chaf, where the Gemara darshans that you can see from all this stuff just how bad it is to improperly use the produce of Shvius. Because this whole Parsha is stated right after describing the laws of Shvius, and essentially what it's describing is that somebody who misuses the produce of Shvius is going to have to go through this process where they won't be successful financially and they'll have to sell themselves to all these different entities. So you see just how bad the sin of misusing Shvius is. But that's the Braisa, at least in the beginning, which describes this Ger Tzedek, this Ger Tzedek Ha'amr L'Inyan Mechira, this statement that Rebbe didn't understand about the complete Ger, which is stated in the context of selling an Eved Ivri. Now that was just the introduction. The Gemara is going to explain now what exactly Rebbe didn't understand. So Amar Mar, Belo Lecha El Leger, Shneemar Leger. In this Braisa we had said that your brother is not going to be financially successful and he's going to sell himself to you, but we don't really mean that he's going to sell himself to you. He's really going to sell himself to a convert. As the verse says, Leger, he's going to sell himself to a convert. So this is the part that Rebbe didn't understand. Lememra the Ger Kani Eved Ivri, is that to suggest that a convert is able to acquire an Eved Ivri? Because you said he's going to be sold to a ger, but I thought that a ger cannot acquire an Eved Ivri. Why did I think that? Reminu, ain't a ger nikna be'Eved Ivri. We have a challenging braisa which says that a convert is not able to be acquired as an Eved Ivri. The ain't isha v'ger konin Eved Ivri. And similarly, a woman or a convert are not able to acquire an Eved Ivri. So a ger is not able to be acquired as an Eved Ivri, and he's also not able to acquire an Eved Ivri. Now, the Gemara is going to explain why that is. Ger lo nikna be'Eved Ivri. A convert cannot be acquired as an Eved Ivri. Why not? Because the verse in the context of an Eved Ivri says, v'shavel mishpachto, that he will return when he's done with his servitude to his family. So the Gemara says, I left out one word intentionally, v'shavel mishpachto ba'inan, we need an Eved Ivri to be able to return to his family, the Haleka. And you don't have that by a Ger, because as we said before, a Ger is not considered to be related to his family on a halachic level. So if the Torah requires that an Eved Ivri is at some point going to go free and return to his family, then it follows that you need the Ger, you need the person, the Eved Ivri, to have family. And a Ger who doesn't have halachic family is not able to be bought as an Eved Ivri. Then the second statement that was brought in this brisa that was brought as a challenge was that a woman and a convert also cannot acquire an Eved Ivri. So ve'ein isha ve'ger konen Eved Ivri, a woman and a convert cannot acquire an Eved Ivri. Isha lab orach ara, the reason a woman cannot acquire an Eved Ivri is because it's not proper, it's not appropriate, as Rashi says, lab orach ara shehum yisiachinima, because this Eved Ivri is going to be secluded with the woman at some point, and we assume that there's an isser of yichud, that a man and a woman who are not married are not supposed to be secluded together. So it would be improper for a woman to acquire an Eved Ivri. And Ger Nami, the explanation for why a convert is not able to acquire an Eved Ivri, is because Gmiri, we have a tradition, we have a halacha, that Dimikni Kani, one who can be acquired as an Eved Ivri, is able to acquire an Eved Ivri. But the lo mikni lo kani, one who cannot be acquired as an Eved Ivri, cannot acquire someone as an Eved Ivri. So if a ger can't be acquired as an Eved Ivri, why not? Because he has to be able to return to his family, and he's not able to do that since he doesn't have a halachic family, then he also cannot acquire an Eved Ivri. So how could we say that your brother, who financially is not performing well, is going to have to sell himself to you, and not really to you, but to a convert? It sounds like a convert is not able to acquire an Eved Ivri. So how does this make sense? That's what Rebbe was bothered by when he says, Ger Tzedek Ha'amri Le'inyin Mechira, when the Torah refers to a convert in the context of selling an Ivri, that I didn't understand what it meant. It's this problem that he didn't understand. That sounds like someone could be sold to a Ger as an Eved Ivri, but we have statements which seem to indicate that a Ger cannot acquire an Eved Ivri. So how do we resolve this contradiction? Amar of Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Eino Kone Bedino Ki Yisrael, Aval Kone Bedino Kenachri. Says Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, you misunderstood. When we said that a ger is not able to acquire an Eved Ivri, all we meant is that he's not able to acquire an Eved Ivri like a Jew acquires an Eved Ivri, to have the same dinim of a Jew who acquires an Eved Ivri, but he can acquire an Eved Ivri like a non-Jew acquires an Eved Ivri, to have the dinim of a non-Jew who has acquired an Eved Ivri. D'tanya, because we have a brisa which indicates that there are differences between when a Jew acquires an Eved Ivri and when a non-Jew acquires an Eved Ivri. Hanirtza v'hanimkar l'nachri, Eino oved lo et haben velo et habat. Says the Brisa, one who has had his ear pierced for indefinite servitude until the year of the Yovel, or one who was bought, was sold as an Eved Ivri to a non-Jew, in both of those cases, the slave would not serve either the child, the son of the master, or the daughter of the master. And how do we know those dinim? So Rashi explains that if you had your ear pierced and you're now serving until Yovel, then you wouldn't serve the son or the daughter, because the pasuk says va'avado le'olam, that you have to serve the master le'olam forever. We understand le'olam to mean le'olamo shel Yovel, that you're only supposed to serve the master until the end of the Yovel. But we understand va'avado, you serve the master, but you don't serve the ben. Va'avado velo le'ben, you serve the master and not the son. And one who sold to a non-Jew, we darshan the pasuk which says v'chishav im koneu, that you have to make this whole calculation with the one who acquired the eved, and we learn from there that you do it with the person who acquired the eved velo im yorshe koneu, not with the heirs of the person who acquired the eved. So essentially, there's a split between one who is a Jew who acquires an Eved Ivri, and one who is a non-Jew who acquires an Eved Ivri. There are differences in those dinim, and similarly, a ger is able to acquire an Eved Ivri, but only like a non-Jew can acquire an Eved Ivri, not like a Jew who can acquire an Eved Ivri.
Does that mean there would also be an obligation to redeem him from a ger? That doesn't make sense. I think when a non-Jew acquires a ger, there's an obligation on his on the ger's family to
a ger and Eved Ivri in general.
An Eved Ivri. When a non-Jew acquires an Eved Ivri, there's an obligation on the family to redeem him from servitude.
Right.
Even if they have to pay money. But you can't...
At a certain point or any time?
I can't remember.
At any time.
Does that requirement come from Bechishavim Koneo? It's that very verse.
No. Bechishavim Koneo, I think it's Vayovel. But you have to get him out of that environment. He's in a non-Jewish environment, and it's an obligation on the family to get him out of there.
Right.
That's so, the din.
So it sounds like the same would be true for a ger, because the Torah, the Gemara is saying says that his dinim are like a non-Jew who acquired an evidivri, not like a Jew.
But that doesn't...
You're saying it doesn't seem to make sense, because the reason the Torah requires you to receive it from a non-Jew is non-Jew. It's not a kosher environment, but if it's a ger, maybe it is a kosher environment. We actually just had a whole discussion about this in Shir, because we're talking about the prohibition of pas akum, of eating the bread of a non-Jew. So they were talking about whether that's like a strict requirement. What would happen if you have a non-Jew who's converting, and he's going to become a really frum person, he has a long beard and everything, but he wants to throw a party to celebrate his geirah. So he spends the entire morning preparing bread and preparing this lavish meal, and then later that afternoon he goes and dunks in the mikvah, and then he invites all his friends over for a seuda. So it depends on how you look at the prohibition against eating the bread of a non-Jew. If it's about like the improper environment, the non-kosher environment, like we're saying with the non-Jew, so when you go over to his meal and you're going to be celebrating with him, he's already Jewish, he's already a frum person, that's not a non-kosher environment, so that should be totally okay. But if we just follow the fact that a non-Jew was the one who baked the bread, so he baked this bread and he was non-Jewish, therefore you shouldn't be able to eat it. So yeah, seemingly, you know,
referencing that discussion. So the mikvah at the end really is just like, doesn't have to be, it doesn't make it a completely official.
The mikvah at the end. No, the mikvah at the end does make it completely official. But the question is, how do you look at bread that was cooked before he went to the mikvah on the fourth
day? So that would make it that he couldn't.
Right. So it depends how you look at it. If it's all about the non-kosher environment of eating together with non-Jews, then because this guy is Jewish now, when you're eating with him, then maybe it should be okay. But if it's just a strict zera that anyone who's non-Jewish who makes bread, you have to be careful about that bread. So maybe even if now he's a totally frum Jew and he converted, since he baked the bread when he was non-Jewish,
and also in the context of interest. If you're lending with interest, there's a takana not to lend money to a nachri with interest. Why? Because you're going to be involved, intimately involved, and you'll learn from him. So if you're lending to someone who's in the process of converting, you know, same question.
Right, yeah.
The same question comes up.
Yeah, 100%.
There's Gemara later that deals with that, right?
There's Gemara that deals with that? If you're lending to someone who's in the process of converting?
Yeah, there was Xera that based it, right? There's Xera. What was Xera?
I think you're right. I don't know. It's been a long time, but we'll get there at some point, hopefully.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe there was Xera made on someone who's converting because he's going to be Jewish. Maybe the time he'll get the money back, he will be Jewish. So how could you accept that money? Now, it's interesting. We discussed here that one who sold to a non-Jew would not serve the daughter of the non-Jew. But we just said a second ago that a woman is not allowed to acquire an evidivri because it's improper. So you may wonder why the Gemara mentions that she can't serve the boss, that an evidivri who sold to a non-Jewish master would not serve the non-Jewish master's daughter. So Tosas points out that it was unnecessary to say that because we just said that whenever you're sold as an evidivri, you can't be sold to a woman. But the Gemara just mentions it because it said you can't serve the son. So for parallel structure, you can't serve the son, you also can't serve the daughter. Okay, interesting. So that was the discussion of the ger in the context of selling an evid ivri that Rebbe didn't understand. Now the Gemara is going to explain the ger in the context of lending with interest that Rebbe didn't understand. We're not quite there yet. Amar mar ve'in isha beger konin evid ivri. Says the Braisa, a woman and a convert are not allowed to acquire an evid ivri. So name of the loka Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Maybe that's against Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who had said, "Detanya, the Braisa says that Isha kones ashvachos ve'ena kones ha'avadim. A woman can acquire maidservants, but she cannot acquire slaves." Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer af kones ha'avadim, and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel actually says that women can acquire slaves. So how could we say that a woman can acquire slaves? That would seem to be against Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Says Gemara, afilu tamer Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. That could be even like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, below kasha. Kan be'eved ivri, kan be'eved knani. It depends what type of eved the woman is acquiring. Eved ivri, sni'ala. If she's acquiring an eved ivri, so we assume that's considered to be more modest, that the eved ivri is a modest person, and therefore no one will suspect that anything's up between the two of them. So then there's actually more of a problem, because then the woman is not going to be careful about avoiding an iser between her and the eved ivri. So such an eved, she would not be able to acquire, and that's what the Braisa was referring to when it said that a woman cannot acquire an Eved Ivri. But Eved Knani, paritzla. An Eved Knani, everything is inappropriate about that whole relationship, and therefore she's going to be careful to avoid any issues, and she would be allowed to acquire and have a knani. So says the Gemara, Elahad Tanya Rav Yosef. Well, how do you understand then the following statement of Rav Yosef, who said that our Malta Lotarbi Kalba, a widow is not supposed to raise a dog, she's not supposed to have a pet dog, Lotashri Bar Beirav Beushbiza, and she also should not host a student of the Beis Medrash as a guest. So Bishlama Bar Beirav Tzniela, I understand why she shouldn't host a student in the Beis Medrash, because he's going to be very modest. Because he's going to be very modest, no one will suspect that anything's up between the two of them, and there's actually a chance that something bad might happen. Elakalba came into Misrachba Mirtata, but the dog, because the dog is going to cling to her and constantly chase her, it's more akin to the Eveknani, where there's, you know, suspicion of an improper relationship, and she's going to be careful to completely avoid such a relationship. It says Gemara, Amri came on the Chishad Yale Umsa Masrik Patra, since if the woman were to just throw a piece of meat to the dog would cling to her and follow her everywhere. So Amri Inshi Mishum Umsa the Shad Yale Hu de Masrik, then if people see that the dog is clinging to the woman, they're going to say that the only reason the dog is clinging to her is because of the meat that she gave the dog, but not because of any improper relationship. Based on that, she'll have an excuse, and she won't be so careful to avoid an improper relationship, and that's why she's not allowed to raise a dog as a pet in her house. It's actually more akin to the Eved Ivri, which we didn't allow her to raise or to have, and thus she can also not have a dog. Now, we're going to get into the discussion I was alluding to a second ago about Ger Toshav, which is stated in the context of interest. So Ger Toshav Amr L'Inyan Ribis Mahi, what was the statement about a secondary type of ger, secondary type of convert, who, as we said, doesn't worship Avodas Kochavim, but he eats non-kosher meat. Rebbe said he didn't understand that. What was that talking about? So Dechtiv, the Pasuk says, V'chi yamuch achicha umata yado imach, it will happen that your friend will be struggling financially, and his property will not be doing well. V'hechazakta bo, so you should hold on to him. Ger v'toshav v'chai imach, whether it's a convert or a resident, he should live together with you. Al tikach meito neshech v'tarbid v'yareta melokecha v'chei achicha imach. And you should not take interest from him, and you should fear God, and your brother will live together with you. So that's the verse that's stated in the context of interest, and it mentions ager v'toshav, it mentions converts, residents. That was the verse. Now, what did Rebbe not understand? He didn't understand because of the following brisa. Remember, we have a brisa which is posed as a question. That lovin mehen umalvin otan beribis v'chen beger toshav. The Mishnah on Ayin Amud Beis we saw yesterday said that you're allowed to borrow or to lend from non-Jews with interest, and the same is true about a ger toshav. The same is true about a convert who's a secondary type of convert. So why would the verse tell me that I'm not allowed to lend with interest to a ger toshav, to the secondary type of convert? The Mishnah said that you could. So Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Miktiv Al Tikach Me'itam, says Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, to the verse that you quoted me, which seemed to indicate that you cannot lend to ger toshavim with interest, did it say that you should not take interest from them in the plural? No, me'itoksiv. It said it in the singular, that you cannot take interest from him, mi'Yisrael. And we understand that to mean only someone who's a full Jew. You're not allowed to take interest from someone who's a full Jew, but you are allowed to take interest from someone who's a ger toshav. Thus, the verse is not at odds with the Mishnah, which said that you could borrow or lend with interest from a ger toshav. And thus, we can explain the psukim in a way that Rebbe should not be confused. Rebbe should now understand the ger toshav ha'amr le'inyan ribis. It's not a problem at all. So that's the end of that discussion about Rebbe's not understanding. Now says the Gemara further, Tanur Rabbanan, we have a braisa. Al tikach me'ito neshef v'tarbit. The verse says that you're not allowed to take interest from a Jew or also from a ger toshav, which we just settled as not really meaning that. Aval ata nase lo arei. But says the verse, you can be a guarantor for someone. It sounds like someone's going to be lending with interest, and somehow you are allowed to be a guarantor for that. So the question is, Arev Laman, who are you being a guarantor for? Ilema Arev Yisrael, if we're saying that you can be a guarantor for a Jew who's lending with ribis, how could that be? Bahatana or Bahatsan, a different girsa. Elu over and below Tase, the following people are all in violation of a negative commandment when they lend with interest. Hamalve, the lender, the halove, and the borrower, Ha'arev, and the guarantor, the ha'edim, and the witnesses. So how could you tell me that you could be a guarantor for a loan of a Jew with interest? This Mishnah, this Braisa that we're quoting, seems to clearly indicate that you cannot. El Linachri. So says the Gemara, it must be that it's a non-Jew that you're allowed to be a guarantor for, even if he's lending with interest. So says the Gemara, b'kaven the dine de nachri de azel bata arva, since the laws of non-Jews state that they're allowed to go to the arev, that they first go to the guarantor to collect payment, they don't even have to go to the borrower to collect payment, then iu niu de kashak b'mine ribisa. How can you be allowed to be a guarantor for the non-Jew? You're the one who's taking interest from the Jew. How is that true? As Rashi explains, because the dinim, because the laws of a non-Jew are that they go to the guarantor first, what's going to happen is the non-Jew lends to some other guy with interest, and then when he wants to collect that payment, he comes and collects it from you, and then you are the one who has to go to the other Jew and collect payment from him. So it's considered as if you're the one who's lending to that other Jew with interest. So how could that possibly be permitted? So Amar Rav Sheshes, Shekiba Alav Ladun Bedina Yisrael. Says Rav Sheshes, the case must be that this non-Jew accepted to treat this loan according to the laws of Jews. And the laws of Jews dictate that the lender has to first go to the borrower to collect payment. He can't go straight to the guarantor. So since he's going to go straight to the borrower and not come to you, it's not as if you're the one who's lending with interest. It's as if the non-Jew is the one who's lending with interest, and that's why you're allowed to be a guarantor on this loan of a non-Jew with interest. So ask the Gemara, Yikiba Ladun Bedina Yisrael, Ribis Nami Lo Lishkol. I don't understand. If this non-Jew accepted to deal with this loan according to the laws of Jews, and that's why he's going to go to the borrower first and not to the guarantor, then he also shouldn't take interest because he accepted to follow the laws of the Jews. The Jews do not allow taking interest. This non-Jew should not take interest from this other Jew. So Amar Rav Sheshes, Shekiba Alav Lazu, Velo Kiba Alav Lazu. Says Rav Sheshes, a little bit of nuance over here. It's possible that he accepted one of the laws of the Jews, but he didn't accept all of them. So perhaps he accepted that he's going to go straight to the borrower and not to the guarantor like the laws of the Jews, but he didn't accept that he's not going to lend with interest, which would also have been according to the laws of the Jews. That part he did not accept. So that's why you're allowed to be a guarantor for such a loan, because he's going to go straight to the borrower, not to you. But this loan does still have interest because that part of it the non-Jew did not accept.
But absent that, it seems that you wouldn't be allowed
to. Absent that, it seems that you would not. Meaning, if he's going to go straight to the guarantor, it would not be allowed. Correct. So now the Gemara goes back to the discussion from the Mishnah on Ayin Amud Beis, where the Mishnah had said that a Jew is allowed to lend his money, the money of a non-Jew, through with the knowledge of the non-Jew, but not with the knowledge of a Yisrael. So the Gemara wants to know exactly what that means. Tanur Rabbanan, says the Braisa, Malve Yisrael ma'osav shel nachri midas ha-nachri, avalo midas Yisrael. A Jew is allowed to lend the money of a non-Jew with the knowledge of a non-Jew, with interest, but he cannot do it with the knowledge of a Jew. That's not allowed. Only with the knowledge of a non-Jew, not with the knowledge of a Jew. So Ketzad, how exactly does that work, says the Gemara? Yisrael shel lav ma'os min ha-nachri beribis. If a Jew borrowed money from a non-Jew with interest, ubikesh lachzirim lo, and the Jew now wants to return that money to the non-Jew, but then matzo Yisrael acher, another Jew finds this Jew who's going to return the money to the non-Jew, ve'amr lo, and he said to the Jew, tznamely, give me the money that you owe the non-Jew, ve'ani elelcha kederach sha'ata malalo, and I'm going to pay you back like you would have paid back the non-Jew. So that would be usur, because you're basically creating a new loan where this second Jew is going to pay you back with interest, and that would be prohibited. V'imhemido etzol nachri, mutter. But if you set up this loan through the non-Jew, where everything will be routed through the non-Jew, then it would be permitted. V'chein nachri shalava mos miyisrael beribis. Similarly, if a non-Jew borrows money from a Jew with interest, ubikesh lachzirim lo, and the non-Jew wants to pay back the money to the Jew, mitzo yisrael acher, but then another Jew finds the Nachri who's going to pay back his loan to the Jew, the Amar lo tnamely bani alalcha kederach sha'atam alalo mutter. And if this Jew says to the non-Jew, give me the money and I'll pay you back the same way you would have paid the Jew, that would be permitted because that's just going to be a loan between a Jew and a non-Jew. V'imhemidu etzel Yisrael, but if the second Jew and the non-Jew set up this whole loan as going through the first Jew, and it's really a loan between two Jews, that would be problematic. That would be prohibited. So says the Gemara, Bishlama Seifa L'chumra. I understand in the second case where a non-Jew borrows money from a Jew with interest, and he's going to pay it back, And then you set up this, a second guy comes and he wants to take the money from the non-Jew and pay it back to the non-Jew. So I understand how if this transaction is routed through the Jew, that that would be prohibited. Why is that? That's just a chumrah. As Rashi explains, basically, technically we shouldn't have to view it that the non-Jew is the agent of the Jew. We should be able to view it as if the non-Jew has his own separate loan with the second Jew, which is being done beribis, and therefore the Jew is not in violation of interest. But as a chumrah, as an extra stringency, we do assume that the non-Jew, that the Nachri, is treated like the agent of the Jew, and therefore it's as if you're the one who's lending with interest to this second Jew. That's a chumrah, where we say that the non-Jew has shlichus, has agency. El Eresha, but in the first case, Kevan de Ein Shlichus Lenachri, Iuniu de Kashalko Mine Rebisa. But in the first case, why do we say that it's permitted if you set up this whole transaction through the non-Jew, that then it becomes permitted? If a non-Jew doesn't have agency, then it's not the non-Jew who's the one who's accepting the ribis, it's you who's accepting the ribis. Because again, in the first case, you borrowed from the non-Jew with ribis and you were going to pay him back, and then another Jew finds you and wants to take the money from you. So even if you get a non-Jew involved, since a non-Jew doesn't have agency, it's as if you're lending to this second Jew with interest, and the second Jew is paying it back to you, and that's a problem. So says the Gemara, Amar Rav Huna bar Manoach, Mishmei Rav Acha, Berei Rav Ika, Hacha b'mayaskinon, Kegon de Amar le Hanichem al Gabe Karka b'hipater. Says Rav Huna bar Manoach, in the name of Rav Acha, Berei Rav Ika, the reason it's permitted in the Reisha, in the first part of the Brisa, if you set up the whole loan through a non-Jew, the case that we're dealing with is where the non-Jew said, put the money on the ground and you will be exempt, you will be freed from this obligation, and then the non-Jew lends to the second Jew. So what's happening according to this answer is, again, you borrowed money from a non-Jew with interest, another Jew found you and said, give me the money. So the way Rav Huna bar Manoach is understanding where it becomes permitted if you set it up with the knowledge of a non-Jew is, you go to the non-Jew, you're going to pay him, and the non-Jew says, just put the money on the ground and you're free. So as soon as you put the money on the ground, you're freed from the obligation. And then the non-Jew gives the money to the second Jew. That's a whole separate loan, but that's a non-Jew lending with ribis to the Jew. And that's why it would be permitted when you set it up with the knowledge of the non-Jew. So ask the Gemara, Hachi Maila Memra. If that's the case, then that's obvious. Why do you need to tell me that? If you set up a whole second transaction where it's really a Jew and a non-Jew who are involved lending money with interest to each other, it's obvious that that's okay. Ela Amar Rav Papa Kegon Shenotol VeNotan BiYad. Says Rav Papa, it must be that you didn't just put the money on the ground and become freed from the whole transaction. Rather, what must have happened is that the non-Jew actually took the money in his hand from you and accepted it, and then he lent it to the second Jew with interest. So that says the Gemara Ba'akati Ma'ala Memra. Still, that's obvious. It's maybe even more obvious, right? That if the non-Jew fully accepted the money and took it into his possession, of course that should be okay. So says the Gemara Ma'u Detema. What might you have thought that Nachri Gufa Ki Avid Adaita the Yisrael Kagamir V'Yahiv Kamash Malan? You may have thought that when the non-Jew takes the money into his hands, that he's doing that on behalf of the Jew, and when he gives it to the second Jew, he's still doing that on behalf of the Jew. It's as if the first Jew is loaning directly to the second Jew with interest. So, kamashmalan, that's not true. We're teaching you that that's not true. And when the non-Jew takes the money into his possession, it's as if he's fully accepting it back as payment from the first Jew. And then he's setting up a whole second loan to the second Jew. And that's why it's permitted. Now, Rav Ashi tries to give another explanation why the first case is permitted. That ki amrina nein shlichus lenachri. When do we say that a non-Jew does not have agency? Hani mili b'truma. That's only in the context of truma, where the notion of agency, the notion of shlichus, is taught. Aval b'chol haTorah kula yesh shlichus lenachri. But in the rest of the Torah, when you're not in the context of truma, we do assume that there is shlichus lenachri. We do assume that there is agency for the nachri, and thus, in the first case, remember the Gemara had started with the assumption that there is no agency for a non-Jew, and therefore, even if you set it up through a non-Jew, you're really the one who's making this whole transaction with a Jew. So now Rav Ashi says, no, since there is shlichus l'nachri, since there is agency for a nachri, it's as if you're just the agent of the nachri, but it's really as if the nachri is the one who's making this whole transaction between him and the second Jew. But says the Gemara, v'hadar Rav Ashi, berusahi, this statement of Rav Ashi is an external statement. It's not an accepted statement. Every time you have this type of statement, which seems to come up a lot with Rav Ashi, there's always another girsa, which says that's not berusa. It's not like an external statement, but it's a bedusa. It doesn't have any substance, any significance to it. Both of these girsas really mean the same thing. But we don't accept this statement of Rav Ashi. Why not? Maishna truma delo. Because why is it that a non-Jew doesn't have agency by truma? Tichtiv atem gam atem ma atem b'nei bris afshlu chachem nami b'nei bris. Because the verse in the context of truma says, it could have said that you will separate your truma, ken tarimu atem trumas Hashem, you're going to separate the truma of Hashem, but the verse actually says, ken tarimu gam atem, it has this extra inclusion of gam, and we learn from this extra word in the Torah of gam, kol etin v'gam in ribuyin hein, we assume anytime the Torah says the word es, or the word gam, it's including something, so that teaches us that ma atem b'nei bris, avtu chachem nami b'nei bris, that just like you have to be Jewish, so too your agents have to be Jewish. And we learn from there, well, it follows then, that shlichus de kol haTorah kula nami v'truma gamrinan la. We learn the shlichus of the entire Torah, agency in every context in the Torah, is learned out from truma. And therefore, if by truma your agents need to be Jewish, then in kol haTorah kula your agents also need to be Jewish. Ella de Rav Ashi berusahi, thus it must be that Rav Ashi's statement is incorrect, and there is no agency in kol haTorah kula. There's no agency for a non-Jew in every aspect of the Torah, and thus we can't necessarily understand, according to Rav Ashi, why in the first case it's permitted to set up this shalom between the first Jew and the second Jew through a non-Jew. Now, Ikeda Amri, another statement that was made, or another version of Rav Ashi's statement is, Amr Rav Ashi, ki amrina nein shlichus l'nachri, says Rav Ashi, when do we say that there's no agency for a nachri? Hani mili inhu ledidan. That's only when a non-Jew is going to serve as our agent. About Anan Lididhu, when we're going to serve as the non-Jew's agent, Havina Luhu Shliach, then we can actually be an agent for the non-Jew. And that's why in the first case, where you set everything up through the non-Jew, it's permitted to lend from the first Jew to the second Jew with Ribbis, because you're doing it through the non-Jew. It's as if you're just acting as the agent of the non-Jew, but it's really as if the non-Jew is the one lending with interest, not you. But again, says the Gemara, Bahadur Vashi Barusahi, this statement of Ravashi is not accepted. Maishna inu lididan delo. Why is it that non-Jews cannot be agents for us? Tichtiv atem gam atem the rabo shluchachem, ma atem b'nei bris, av shluchachem b'nei bris. Because that verse by Truma says that just like you have to be Jewish to separate Truma, so too your agents have to be Jewish, and that's why non-Jews can't serve as agents for us. But anan lidu nami, ma atem b'nei bris ka'amar. If we're going to serve as agents for the non-Jews, we also have the same problem of everyone needing to be Jewish. Both parties in agency need to be Jewish. The agent needs to be Jewish, and the person sending the agent needs to be Jewish. Therefore, just like non-Jews cannot be agents for us, we too cannot be agents for them. Elohadeh Rav Ashi Barusahi, and therefore Rav Ashi's statement is not accepted. If you don't mind, maybe we'll just go a few more lines, because we still have a little bit more time, just to finish up this last discussion. So the Braisa, one more answer for the difference between the beginning and the end, is Ravina. Ravina Amar, Nihi Deshlichos Lenachri Leisle, Dizchiyah Midirabanan Isle. Granted that a non-Jew does not have agency, and that's why you can't necessarily understand why in the first case, when you set up the whole loan through a non-Jew, how it becomes permitted, it's not going to be based on agency because they don't have agency, but Zechia Midirabanan or Zechia Miha, different girsa, non-Jews do still have the ability to acquire for other people. And since they have the ability to acquire for other people, then you can set up this whole loan, you can set up this whole transaction through the non-Jew. It's as if the non-Jew is the one lending to the second Jew. How do we know that a non-Jew could have the ability to acquire for somebody else, even if he doesn't have agency? That's midi dehavi akatan. That's just like a katan, like a child, like a minor. Katan lav afagav the leis leis shlichos ilei zechia midirabanan. Don't we say that even though a minor doesn't have the power of agency, doesn't have the ability to act as an agent, he still has zechia midirabanan. He still has the ability to acquire or to have somebody else acquire on his behalf. As Rashi quotes, that's non zochin the katan. We have a Mishnah of Baba Basra which says that you can acquire something on behalf of a minor. So hachanami lo shna. So just like we find that a minor does not have agency, but does have the ability to acquire, or other people can acquire on his behalf, so to a non-Jew who doesn't have the ability to appoint an agent or to serve as an agent, he still could have the ability to have someone else acquire on his behalf. Therefore, when you, the Jew, are involved in this with you're involved with this loan with interest, you're just acquiring it on behalf of the non-Jew, but it really it's the non-Jew who's lending to a Jew with interest, and thus it's not problematic. But says the Gemara, we don't accept this answer of Ravina either. Velohi, we don't accept this notion that a non-Jew would not have agency, but would have the ability to have someone else acquire for him. Why? Because Yisrael ati l'chlal shlichus. When you have a minor who's Jewish, even though he doesn't have agency now, he's eventually going to become an adult, and he will have the ability to do agency, to act as an agent, or to have someone else act as an agent for him in the future, and that's why he could have the ability to have someone else acquire for him. But akum lo ati l'chlal shlichus, a non-Jew will never come to the ability to have agency, and thus he's not going to have the ability to have someone acquire for himself. And meila, it should not be permitted to have this whole loan set up with interest. And thus, we don't really understand, according to Ravina, why the first case is permitted.
Thank you very much.